How can you put in enough room to fail in a way that it improves your process rather than makes you question everything?
The road to success is paved with inspirational quotes about failure. But if failing better is so integral to creativity, why are we so terrified of it? What would happen if we fell in love with our mistakes, made them a part of the process? In this episode of The Process, we talk to a designer who is trying to change his approach to failure. Tom Stables is one of the founding members of Makerversity, a community of designers and creatives who make up part of our creative community at Somerset House, based alongside the studios here. Since it started 10 years ago, Makerversity has expanded to over 300 members who've succeeded in fields as diverse as product design, biomaterials, ethical AI, and pollution reduction. Tom was there in the very beginning.
Everyone was a business owner and everyone was trying something. We'd work on each other's projects. We'd all help each other out. It was a really, you know, intoxicating thing to be part of.
And for him, it was one of his biggest mistakes that was the most formative.
So we were doing this installation in central London, and it was huge. When we were on site, we suddenly realised that we couldn't get the whole thing built. And if we left the half thing built, it could potentially hurt someone. So at like 4 a.m, we had to make this call. It was safer to just quit than it was to try and chance it, and something terrible happened. I mean, there was this awful moment where I was just sawing everything in half so it could fit in a zip van and driving it back to our studio at Somerset House and dumping it.
And it was the community rallying around him that, in the end, helped to make a solution.
All the best engineers and thinkers in the community all got together and said, how can we help you solve the engineering problems that were in this? And the other thing they did was have a night where everyone shared their biggest mistake. That's when it really made sense to be part of a community.
This got us thinking. Is failure more productive than success? And outside of design, who are the professionals that make the most room for error, and what could we learn from them? We start out in the workshops of Makerversity.
This bit here is a wood workshop. I mean, I think design a lot is informed decision making, and you're kind of trying to work out what it's not as much as work out what it is.
Here's some audio texture for you.
Most of the time, you expect to be wrong.
All right.
And that's really nice.
So this is the lace cutter where we... I cut all the packaging for my glassware here.
Now in our process, we build in a lot of time to be wrong. And that is so informing.
So now inside, this is all my packaging.
My name's Tom Stables, and I'm a multidisciplinary designer. So the starting point for all my projects is people, and that's basically why I find design interesting. People, how people interact with each other, how people interact with things, how people interact with each other through things, how we experience the world.
And this is some glassware that we've designed. And this, very importantly, stacks.
And the thing I like about glassware is the moments in life it occupies.
Which has been a criticism levelled at our last range of glass, that it didn't stack, whereas these definitely do.
But a lot of my work was going away from objects. Being a designer, you're sort of producing stuff, and I was like, the world's got enough stuff. But the thing I'm actually really interested in is maybe not the stuff itself, but the interactions that drive our experience.
So this is a new kind of infusion pump for use to give people IV fluids in hospital.
So the era of design I grew up in, I guess, was the era of, like, star designers who come in, wave a wand. You know, it's the designer as the auteur. And I think that when you get into the job, you realise there's very little of that. So I prefer it as, like, yeah, designer is, like, the listener, the facilitator. I'm really interested in, like, things just not being strange and things feeling obvious, like, obvious in retrospect. When I was at my graduation show, a guy came up to me and said, I'd like you to apply for this job, and it was working with hearing aids. I was like, well, that doesn't sound great, and it's like earwax, but I just loved it. And it's because hearing aids enable you to be yourself, and how you share a joke and receive a joke, and how you be in a room. And we've built up this vernacular of things that look appropriate to wear. And none of them is a pink prawn behind your ear. Like, it's all like, it's all. And I don't think people want it to be as small as possible. I think they want it to look as appropriate as possible. And that's what I find so interesting about design, are those moments of my situation's changed, but how can I still be me?
Where am I? I am in pain. I'd like to know about my mortgage.
This is an app to enable people to communicate in intensive care. Often when people in intensive care, they are living their normal life, then they'll have a car accident, and suddenly they're intubated, so they've got a breathing tube and can't speak. And so we found cases of people saying that they couldn't actually ask what had happened to them until their tube got taken out. And I got brought in to work on this app that suggested a few functions. Like, it said, I want to say I'm in pain, I want to say that I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm hot, I'm cold. And then I asked people, what do you actually want to say? And they said, who's paying my mortgage? And like, who's feeding the dog? And then also they were having mind-altering hallucinations. One of the things they'd given people up to that point was an Etch-a-Sketch to communicate with. At the peak of my powers, I couldn't communicate via Etch-a-Sketch, let alone after a trauma. Any process needs things to go wrong to be interesting. And the ones that invite in more of the unknown are generally the more interesting projects. In this episode, I'd really like to find out how other people do that. How do they invite in failure and allow for the unknown without it turning into actual failure and chaos?
So usually whenever I'm making my material, I measure out some of the ground up food waste. And then take some water to mix in.
I wanted to speak to some people from the community. We're going to speak to Cassie, who I haven't actually met before.
My name is Cassie Quinn. I'm a regenerative materials designer. We're based here in Makerversity. I've been trying to develop a plastic alternative and focus primarily on using food waste as a source. And now it's starting to turn into more of a viscous liquid mixture.
But I'm really interested in her work because she's using a biological process, which, you know, we don't have full control over.
Essentially what I end up with is a A4 size sheet that feels and looks like plastic, sometimes like vinyl, sometimes a bit like cling film, that I then cut out shapes from to make embellishments and sequins. And so we would just punch out holes from the sheet. My goal initially, why I started making these materials, is because I studied fashion, textiles, print and embroidery, and it was actually whenever I was going to make my first collection, and I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to be sustainably dyed, all the fabrics to be sustainable, and then also looking at the embroidery to be sustainable, and I just couldn't find anything that was really exciting. And so I thought, I'm going to try and do it myself. And that was really where it started from. And just really started to search online for like at-home recipes that I could experiment with that were made from either waste streams or anything that I could access myself. And so I was really interested in how we could use, almost view it as a resource rather than a waste stream.
And how quickly did you become comfortable with this process? Of how much of it is chance and how much of it is intentional?
Yeah, I mean, for the first 6 months that I was playing around with it, it just wouldn't work. Well, it would work maybe 1 in 10 times. And it was very, very frustrating. But I think it was almost like, I'm not a scientist by any means. I mean, I studied fashion and textiles. And so really accidentally fell down this path of making the materials. But I found it really exciting because you're really learning about how little control you have over it, or how little you really understand the controls that you have over it. And also trying to learn from the sort of mistakes, like when things fall onto the material, what actually happens. And I kind of love that. I kind of love being sort of afraid of it a bit. You know, you're so challenged that you're afraid because you've no idea, you can't even imagine what the outcome of the end result's going to be. And it's almost like then you're having to lay the bricks down as you're walking because you're guiding your path to where it needs to be, which is, the most exciting things happen in that sort of space.
And that comfort in not knowing is so important, I think. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, massively.
And so as you see yourself as a designer and you see yourself in relation to this material, mm-hmm. How much is the material doing and how much are you doing?
I'd say that like the material's probably doing like 95% of the work. because really, you know, I'm giving it the conditions that it thrives in. But I mean, the material is as it dries, and although I've been able to, you know, control it to an extent, really there's still, to this day, there's still that 1 in 10 chance of that material kind of doing something different. And even some of these samples, even the thought of throwing them in the bin, it feels like that's like a, you know, thrown away a part of you. Here we've got a little Petri dish tray of some of our sequins. So as you can see here, this one started to warp. So this is quite a large one. This must be about 25 millimetres. And here we've got a sheet, one of our bioplastic sheets that has really curled up quite a lot. This was due to, after it had dried, wrong storage of the material, basically. And it's a translucent sort of amber yellow colour.
What's been your most informative mistake?
So at the start of this year, there was a project I was working on for big company, big brand. And sometimes what I do is the trays that I use, I'll etch on the surface so that as the material dries, it forms that shape. And so obviously if it dries flat, it dries as it should, then you've got just this nice texture on the surface. But what happened was I made a mistake whenever I put another sample on top in the drying oven. And it was almost a dried sheet, but it all cracked into tiny pieces, almost if you imagine what glitter would look like. And I'd accidentally tipped it into that tray. And so at first I thought, I don't have time to even like look at this. I'm just going to start the sample again and do, you know, it separately and leave that in there. And then came back to it the day after and saw that when I removed it from the tray and held it up to the light, it almost looked like amber. That started this whole new project that's actually, I call them almost non-mined gemstones. But if I had have just poured that out immediately and cleaned that tray and just done it again, I never would have saw that. And so now for me, the mistakes, it's almost like, okay, that's another tangent of another project. So everything is something new to learn from, or some new direction to go. So from that, I really learned about letting things run its course.
Really interesting. And if with this sort of level of experimentation, how key is that for this whole thing to be interesting to you? Like if you could replicate it and you suddenly had a sequin company, would it stop being interesting? Like is it the mistakes that make it interesting, or the level of randomness?
Everyone asks me, what are you going to scale? And for me, it's not the most exciting. You know, just doing things over and over again, I get bored. You know, I really love being challenged and trying to discover, not necessarily discover something new, but to understand something new. So yeah, the experimentation is definitely what I find the most exciting. If you just scaled up the sequins and it was a sequin company, I don't think I'd find it that exciting.
As a designer, and Cassie being a designer, there's elements of her process I really recognise. So all of the experimentation and the process is happening in private. And the outcome that people see, the sequins, or in my case, the intervention, is still something finished and something resolved and something that makes sense. What I'm really interested in is, what if that process is the outcome? What if you're on stage failing publicly? What if the thing that you presented was the mistake itself?
My name is Julia Masley, and I do clowning.
Julia Masley is an Estonian performer, and her shows are completely built on failure.
Mistakes really do connect people. That's when we want to help each other, or you see each other's humanity and you recognize each other. I'm a trained clown, so I have to go and try it in front of an audience to figure it out. So it's very much failing in front of everyone until I figure out what I'm doing. And actually, failure, I want to make sure that there's a bit of room for that to happen, because actually, when it's happening, then that's often the best part for the audience. They laugh the most when it's really just going so wrong.
Can you tell us a bit more about what you do and how your shows are, and maybe your most recent show?
My recent show, Ha 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 Ha, I solve audiences' problems. I have a big mission to solve everyone's problems and to make everything better. And it's bound to go wrong, which is helps for me to fail, actually. And then, but then there's always this optimism that I'll try my best, and then sometimes actually works. Some problems do get solved, and sometimes other people start solving each other's problems in the audience. That's when it gets really special. Normally it's some epic thing that I'm trying that is bound to fail. That's kind of the way I like to approach my shows.
And how, when you are approaching a show and preparing it, how much is pre-planned and how much is left to chance, and how comfortable are you along that spectrum?
So this show is completely left to chance. Like, there's a structure. I know I'm coming out, and I know there's this beginning bit that I do every time, but it's very responding to the crowd as they are. And then I have a leg instead of my arm, and I have a microphone attached to the leg, and I point it at people and I just say one word: problem.
Problem.
Big problem.
What is it?
And then they say something either extremely like a stupid trivial problem or sometimes really profound. And then I solve that. So it's very, actually, in a way, unprepared.
What is bothering you?
My thoughts.
What kind of thoughts?
Troublesome one.
So the last gig that I did, I just solved one problem, the whole set.
What's your name?
David.
I really like you.
It was David, lovely, lovely man, and he had a problem, these negative thoughts in his head.
Accept me.
And that was really moving, and everyone loved him because he was so vulnerable. I think the crowd was just like, wanted him to succeed. It was hard to solve that problem. It's such a big one. I can't just, you know, give it a quick solution. So I tried empathizing with him because I also feel that. And then he said what was stopping him from accepting himself was inertia.
But what is stopping you from accepting yourself?
Inertia.
Being tired.
Yeah.
Oh, come with me. I have something for you.
And so I got him on the stage. And
take off your t-shirt.
He took his shirt off. And then poured a bottle of vodka on him. I think he felt alive in that moment. He looked alive. And then I asked the crowd if they'd hold him. And he fell on top of the crowd, and they're all holding him up in a sort of a crowd surf.
How do you respond to be ready to respond and to be ready to react in a way? Like, how does that change with each show? And how does, do you put more and more in place to enable yourself, or?
With performing, I think, or comedy, or I don't know, clown, I think specifically, is like people want to feel really safe. So there's ways of doing that, like with the sound before the show. You kind of can put them in a little bit of a state, maybe subconsciously already. All the things you do to dress it up, maybe a costume or something mysterious, something with the lighting. It all helps because then it gives the failures nice frame around it. I took the show this year to Edinburgh, and in my head it was a work in progress show. Like, I was planning on just figuring it out in Edinburgh and then working on it after. But then what happened this year, like, was that this show that was work in progress in my head ended up doing the most well out of all my other work. It just did so well, so effortlessly. And then that made me really be like, oh, so maybe I should keep it a work in progress in my head. Because last year I thought, this is finished, you know, and then I got bored of it in the middle. But now it's not finished, so I'm constantly, it's still breathing, it's alive, and I am excited when I'm performing it. Not only excited, also terrified, you know, but then it feels alive. I guess there's this element of failure, like it could go wrong, and I guess I just have to accept that, and it might be that it will fail.
What does failure look like in the show? Like, are there different types, and what does that mean?
The real failure is like when people bring up a world problem and I'm like, I don't know yeah. how to solve this. And I tried solving it in like clowny ways and it just felt so artificial and like something like climate crisis. And then I tried to ask other people to help me with that, or like someone drafted an email to an MP in one show, so it's like a first step. But it's these big problems that I can't take on by myself, I think, is the big failure.
A lot of my work is about user research, and so often I'm going out to try and solve a problem by speaking to people that experienced that problem. And I'd wonder if you're doing a similar thing. So you're asking for problems, but not problems to the point where you can't bring it back.
Wait, that's so interesting. So you go to solve problems. So you research it. Can you? I just want to understand how you're solving the problems because I want to learn from you.
Oh no!
No, I do. I need more tactics. I need more tactics.
I don't have the answers.
Please. So wait, the research thing sounds really good. So you go out.
I might have failed in the podcast. Oh no! Basically, I think design is informed decision making, and so rather than just me guessing, I think that the solution lies in people explaining to me what their problem is. I once did a project about prosthetic limbs, and we said to people, how do you view it? And they said, well, it's not replacing a foot. Like, my body is already complete. They're like, it's more like a shoe. And the last thing you'd ever want a shoe to look like is a foot. Like, that has never hit the market. So it's kind of that idea of, like, asking people, what do you actually want? Who are you actually? And then informing design through that.
Wait, I love this so they wanted to be a shoe more than the foot.
Yeah, they viewed it as not a replacement for something missing, but rather than their body is as complete as it is.
That's beautiful.
And then you put it on, which is why now most prosthetic limbs don't look like a replacement leg. They look like some sort of robotic, incredible adornment. Right?
Yes.
So it's, and it doesn't always work, but like that's the idea.
I love this so much. This is amazing. I'm going to use that, I think. I'll try.
So I think lots of design is about just being comfortable with not knowing. But then also like...
Really?
Yeah, totally, because otherwise you just repeat.
So it's not so different world then?
It's all creativity, informed creativity, right? And I think most creative things that are interesting are a conversation between you and an environment, you and a person, you and a system. And when there's no back and forth, then it's usually not very interesting.
Yeah, in a way, failure is also just process, like... It's never really failure, right? It's just, but I love the word and it's great to say it. But yeah, it's like if you say this show failed, no, this was my stepping stone onto this place.
It's that idea of what is a failure, what is not a failure within your work is really interesting to me. And that, so I understand you trained at Ecole Philippe Goliot. It's a notorious French performance school. Is it a clown school?
Yeah. Well, it's a theatre school actually, but...
And what was it like?
It was incredible and excruciating and painful and wonderful all in once. The whole thing is about actually accepting being bad. So, and I was there when I was 19. So this time where you don't want to accept that you're bad, you want to be really good at everything. it's like, yeah, you just... You go on stage and he bangs his drum and he's like, you are shit.
What happened? You are shit. And then, goodbye. And then you have to leave very slowly to your seat. It was just so painful. And then something happened, like, when I just 10 weeks into the course, and I was just like, fuck this. Like, I'm not going to be a clown, and I don't need clown. I don't need this anymore. Like, I'm done. I'll be good at the tragedy module, but I'll be really bad at clown, and that's fine. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I just went to school, and then we did some exercise. You had to pretend to be a plumber. And I was like, okay, fine, because I'm paying for the school still. I'll get up anyway. So then I just got up, and then, like, I just ran on stage. I did not care at all about how it's going to go. And then I was just like, oh, God, I looked at the pipes. And then everybody laughed, you know? Like, the whole audience, everybody laughed. And I was just in shock. Like, after 10 weeks, they're laughing now. Like, I didn't understand. And then, like, I was really shocked. And then they laughed more. And I think they were laughing because how shocked I was. And then I started, like, crying of joy because I couldn't believe I made people laugh. And then they started to laugh because I was crying of joy. And then I was extremely confused. I was just, like, trying to figure out, like, confusion. And then they laugh how confused I am. Then it became quiet again, like that silence that I very much know. And then I was just like, shit, now how do I not, like, mess this up for myself? Like, how do I continue? How do I leave on a good note? Like, and then I did exactly the same thing. I did exactly the same. I ran on, did exactly the same. And they laughed again. I was like, no way, like, no way. And then, like, the last thing, I thought, okay, I've got this now, completely got it. So then I was like, I'll say something like I said, oh God, they laughed, so now I have to say, oh Jesus, that's going to be funny. So then I was like, looked at the back, oh Jesus, and like complete silence. But then, like, I was shocked that it was silence, and then they started laughing because I was shocked. So this was my story of, for the first time, having this breakthrough, and I got really addicted to it after that.
And how, could you talk a bit more about the flop? Sort of, to, you know, yeah. How does that relate to everything else that you do, or that moment? Can you kind of try and describe it?
Yeah, so it's actually, well, the flop is when you try something and then it just, like, bombs. In our school, we're taught that the flop is actually your friend. So when you flop, it's a good opportunity after, like, as this silence hits you, it's a good opportunity to look at the audience and, like, share. And then in that moment, a lot of the time, it's huge laughter, like, huge release. Because people are like, oh my God, like, we just saw this idiot fail. And they're okay with it. They're okay, you know? If that person was looking at the floor and, like, in pain, we probably wouldn't laugh.
What's the funniest thing that's gone wrong for you on stage?
That's something I should think about. There's so many things gone wrong. Okay, I guess there was one time where I had this act where I was dressed as a bin, like, trash bag on me. And, like, I had this whole act planned, right? And it was in this beautiful, like, I didn't know it was going to be in a theater with, like, a high stage. And I was coming out from the audience in the bin. And I had this whole act planned. But then, as I go to the stage, I just, like, bumped into the stage. Like, and it's so high, I couldn't. And I tried to, basically the whole act ended up me trying to get up. And then, like, it just fit, it was my time to go. And I didn't even stop my act. But, like, it was a joyful failure. I think people enjoyed it.
Did you try again the next
time? Well, it's, yeah, in a way, like, I should really do that again.
but it's really stage dependent. I need this high stage, but I should book it.
You can find that out.
I can easily find that. Yeah. That's right. What often, like, you try it second time, it doesn't get the same response. They can smell that you're trying to fake it.
What advice have you got for me if I said I was trying to fail more successfully?
Ooh, I think really be a massive optimist. Like, really believe in yourself and be a massive optimist and do the best thing you could possibly do as Tom now in your life, like, in your work. Like, try to do the absolute best and then the best Tom has ever done next, and then aiming for a Nobel Prize. It's like what Philippe always told us. You have to try to get a Nobel Prize.
Can you explain a bit more about that?
I think because then you go, you don't doubt yourself. And then when you fail, it's just so much more epic. You know?
When we first started talking about failure, the thing I was really interested in is that we talked about it and then I suddenly sort of had this realization that not all things we call failure are failure. So sometimes it's like a happy accident or sometimes it's a thing. And then there are some things that are just like a big fat failure. That's like, there's no redeeming quality. It's kind of the learnings are kind of like eat your greens kind of learnings.
Do you think there are these things? Yeah, there are.
Yeah, right? Like you sort of...
We do big mistakes.
The learnings are valuable because you don't repeat that. Whereas there are some amounts of failure that you want to repeat. So you want to set the conditions for not knowing and you want to know, you know, to be on that risk of like, do I have enough to do something interesting with?
Yeah, because I feel like during this podcast, I also had this realization. I was like, wait, failure is just process, right?
Yeah.
Like the name of your... It all connects.
Failure's just a process. I might take that for my next performance review. Thanks to Tom Stables, to Cassie Quinn, and to Julia Masley. The Makeversity exhibition, Designing for the Real World, is on until the 4th of February at Somerset House in London. This series of The Process is produced by Alana Chance and presented by me, Laurent John, for Somerset House. The exec producer is Eleanor Scott. The theme music is by Car Beard. If you're enjoying the series so far and have time to send us a review or send us a rating, we'd love to hear from you. See you next time.